Welcome to the podcast To Be Named Later, where we explore the world a conversation at a time. Sit back and enjoy. Here are your hosts, Chris and Kelly.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the podcast To Be Named Later. My co-host Chris is not with us today, but I have a very special and probably the most important guest in my life, my wife, Amy. Amy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Kelly, and thank you for having me.
You're more than welcome. Amy has extensive experience traveling the globe, and I just wanted to bring her on the podcast to chat a little bit about travel, some of the things that you should think about in learning lessons. Over time, I think we'll have Amy back as a guest and delve into some of her specific trips. But to start with, Amy, since I've known you, you've kind of traveled for probably at least a year all over the globe. I think when we added it up, it's 5 continents, 30 countries, loads of different experiences. What do you think gave you that travel bug?
First of all, I want to clarify for the listeners that I don't consider myself to be some hardcore traveler. I don't have crazy, intrepid stories, but I have had a lot of experience with different types of travel, from traveling independently to being with a small group to being with a little bit bigger group to, you know, you and I traveling together. And for your question about what gave me the travel bug, I cannot think of a specific instance, but I am someone who's curious about life and the world. I love history. I love art. I love good food. And traveling around and seeing things for yourself and experiencing different places with all of your senses is so much richer than watching a TV show or a documentary. Not that I think that's a bad thing, if that sometimes can stimulate interest. And if you're not comfortable with going outside your comfort zone yet, it's a good start. But I think you'll agree with me that being at a place and experiencing it is very different than watching it. Like, for example, the football game. You can have the same game, but you would have a very different experience if you were there in person versus if you were in your living room watching it.
That's most definitely true. A football game itself tends to be pretty loud and chaotic in person and not quite so much at home, depending on who you're watching with. That said, I was thinking about that comment when I said loud and chaotic, and it reminded me of an interesting experience. The first time we went to India and stepped outside the hotel, I think my first experience, the way I would describe it, was loud and chaotic. But after you got used to it and understood it, it was amazing. I mean, how it all kind of still worked. So I think there is something about travel where as you gain familiarity, you understand it more.
I think there's something to be said for that. And you are right that India is a country that you really cannot be a passive observer. I remember us stepping outside that hotel after we woke up from that late night flight coming in and walked outside the gates. And it was loud and chaotic and people were coming right up to you and there was just masses of people. This was the first time either of us had been in Asia. And as I said, it can be intense. India is a wonderful country, but it definitely can be chaotic. And especially if you're jet lagged and not feeling 100%, it really is overwhelming.
I think the other thing is that a lot of times it's a perspective, because I'm sure to people that are from there, that everything that we would describe as loud and chaotic, they might call more, hey, that's just how life is. And they're like, how can you be here when it's so quiet and calm?
Right. I mean, I think that for some cultures, the Western culture really comes across as sterile and not very colorful.
So India is one place, and that trip was based off of, a need to go due to an invitation to a wedding. How do you kind of pick the places you're going to go, and what are some of the things you think about as far as whether it's a good time or place to go at any given moment?
Sometimes what captures my imagination might be watching a movie or seeing a picture of a place or reading about it in a book and saying, wow, this really seems pretty cool. I'd like to go and see that and experience that for myself. So as far as picking where to go, I always have a bucket list, if you will, and that's a pretty fluid list, if you will. But in thinking about where to go, consider the time of year. You know, are there festivals or other things going on that might be interesting to check out, or conversely, might make travel a little bit more difficult? What is the budget? How much time do I have? And that helps to set a foundation for picking a place for where to go. Also, airline prices, especially these days where they're pretty crazy.
The travel is, there's a lot that goes into it, but and I certainly won't call myself any sort of expert, but I remember probably my most important learning experience was the first trip that we took to England, and packing appropriately matters. We got off the plane with a friend, what I called the friend, of a huge suitcase that we thought we had the world by the horns in. We affectionately called Big Wheelie. But and we're like, we'll put all of our stuff in one suitcase, make it easier.
Exactly. We thought that we were doing a smart thing by condensing all our stuff. I don't think either of us overpacked per se, but we didn't really understand that big suitcase wasn't going to fit very well in small elevators, and when you carted up flights of stairs in European hotels, when you're on the train, and of course, you know, big luggage screams American.
There's nothing quite like dragging a big suitcase around the streets of London for probably a 45-minute walk to a hotel.
Indeed.
I've definitely learned since then, no matter what the trip is, pack small. And I think, talk a little bit more about that, Amy. Like, what are you doing, right? Is there like a kind of a number of things you should think about? Or
We've definitely come a long way since Big Wheelie, to be sure. For me, I like to pack as, I mean, it's always a balance between gauging what are your activities you're going to be doing and having just enough things. Also, how often you're going to be able to do laundry. So thinking about that, I prefer taking my things in a carry-on, particularly a soft carry-on where I can use it as a backpack. That's not for everyone. You can also have a small wheelie bag if that's more your style. But for me, I like to carry my things, and I try to generally, with some adaptations depending on said activities, temperature variations and such, I try to follow more or less the rule of three. So three tops, three bottoms, no more than three pairs of shoes, and such.
So there's a lot that goes into travel, as I've said a couple times. So you get yourself packed, and you know where you're going, and you're not taking around a big old suitcase, and you got the right amount of stuff. What are things that you think about or look for as far as where to stay, to kind of try and have an authentic experience, but maybe not too authentic in some cases where you're experiencing some of the rougher parts of things, but also not breaking the bank in a 5-star hotel?
So where I would stay, where I start with, is I look at some online resources. Because there's a lot of hot garbage out on the internet, I think it's important to look at different sources and just get a good picture. So you can look at things like TripAdvisor and such, and that's usually updated, so if a place closes and such, you won't bother to look there. But I also look at social media sites for well-seasoned travelers who have good reputations and are credible, such as Women on the Road or Nomadic Matt. They may have some information. There are also online, you can go to social media sites like Solo Travelers. Lonely Planet has an online as social media. They used to have the thorn tree. That's been discontinued, but they've transitioned to Facebook, probably some other social media sites that you can ask questions or enter information into search engines and get some more up-to-date information on places to stay. As far as deciding what sort of cultural activities and such, I tend to look at some guidebooks for information for that. And again, when you're doing research for a trip, it's important to get different perspectives so that you can get a clearer picture. At least that's how I roll, if you will. A good guidebook for me is someone who has been in the country and is very familiar with it. For example, I haven't been to Mozambique yet, but the Brat Guide is co-written by Hilary Brat, who is the co-founder of the Brat Guides. And she's gone back and forth to Mozambique for decades and obviously is very familiar with it, as opposed to someone who might be assigned to go to a region for a few months or maybe a year, traveling on the road to find some of the best places. And there have been some rumblings in the past that some guidebook writers, I'm not going to say which guidebooks, but they may get kickbacks or accept other sorts of bribes or free items to plug certain places. And you'll see that sometimes on some Instagram influencers. Some influencers might have some information that's useful, but if they're getting their, if they're being paid for their promotion, have some caution with that.
So going around a country, there's a lot of different ways you can do it. You can plan it yourself. You can be 60 people on the bus, get out for an hour, take your pictures, walk around, get back on the bus. You can use different tour companies. What are your experiences and what do you like to do and why?
It depends on where I go. I'm finding more and more as I've gained confidence as a solo and independent traveler that I like to arrange things by myself. Sometimes I mix it up. Like, for example, there's no harm in taking a day tour with a company and having a guide. A local guide can really open up a place to you, can show you more local life and introduce you to an aspect of what the locals experience that you would not have if you tried it by yourself. But I've also had experiences where the local guide just tries to shuffle you through and doesn't really offer anything that's meaningful. So how I pick, again, you know, and at some point there's a judgment call, but looking at the reputation of the different companies, what some of the reviews have to say, and, you know, again, looking at different sources that have had this experience with a certain company will give you some information as to whether this may be credible or not. Now, I've traveled independently, like to places by myself where I arranged everything myself. I've also gone on small group tours, such as with Intrepid. I've had great experiences with them. And I've gone with some other companies that sometimes have had good and sometimes not as good of an experience with. I've never been on one of those big bus tours where you've got the stereotypical snapping cameras. I've also done an overland tour, which is probably the loosest way to have a tour, where you've got a group of people basically on a truck and you're trekking through areas of a country that are more remote. And it's where it can be more or less like a hop on, hop off. So if you're not comfortable going to a place by yourself, or if the logistics of going to a place solo and planning it yourself won't work, either because you don't have time or because there's not the infrastructure in the country that supports that, then you might find that going with a smaller group or something might work for you. And in my view, we can laugh at the big bus thing, but to me, I think that what's most important is if you get out your comfort zone and you're willing to travel, that I think means a lot.
So we've kind of done a lot of chatting, Amy, about you know, how you get there, what you should take. I like to think about it, you know. So now you're kind of all packed up, and you have had many places to go. The most recent was Ecuador. Why Ecuador?
What I liked about Ecuador is it offers a wide range of cultural, natural, and artistic diversity in such a small area. Also, while I've traveled a bit through Asia, a little in Africa, in Europe, and of course North America, I really hadn't had the opportunity to go to South America, so I thought this would be a good introduction to that continent.
And all you told me that Ecuador is a kind of a land of different regions and things. Go over that a little bit.
So Ecuador is supposedly, it's said to be comprised of four worlds: the coast, the Galapagos, the Amazon, and the mountain range. The Galapagos tends to be the most well-traveled in Ecuador, but I was most interested in this go-round in looking at some of the sites and experiences that were in the Ecuadorian Andes.
What were some of those sites that you experienced?
Well, I did all sorts of stuff. So I had a spiritual cleansing by a shaman while I was there, and actually got to tour a couple indigenous communities. I went to the large Saturday market in Otavalo, which is South America's largest textile market. I got to go to ethnobotanical gardens. I had chocolate tastings. Fun fact, 60% of the world's highest grade cacao pods come from Ecuador.
Talk a little, I mean, let's delve into a few of those. Spiritual cleansing, what was that all about, or what happened there?
I went to Otavalo for a weekend, and I was interested in connecting with, learning a little bit about the indigenous ways of life of some indigenous communities. So I took a day tour with a company that's run by an indigenous community, and I had the opportunity to meet a shaman at his place, and it's held, the ceremony is held at a sacred spring. It starts off with, they burn Palo Santo and some other woods, and using the elements of earth, wind, fire, and water, essentially the ceremony cleanses you of bad juju.
And what happens in the ceremony itself?
So initially, a fire is lit in a bowl, and at north, south, east, and west cardinal points, there are herbal bouquets, because there were four of us who were getting, there were three of us actually who got the, no, four of us who got the spiritual cleansing, sorry. So after, initially the fire is set and the shaman does an incantation. In this particular shaman combines elements of indigenous religion with some Catholicism, but not all indigenous communities do that, but this one did. And then, so he spoke in a combination of Quechua and Spanish, and then we went to the sacred spring. You stand in it, you change into a bathing suit, water is poured on you, he ingests and spits this herbal liquid at you, and people might think, oh, well, that sounds really bad, but spit is not always a bad thing. It can be a benediction in some cultures, and that's using the air and water to cleanse. So, and then the shaman also touches you with the herbal bouquets from the head to the feet to help clean out any bad energies, and you are positioned slowly, you know, north, south, east, and west.
To talk about another thing that you said, and you talked about the chocolate from Ecuador, having been a beneficiary of being able to taste some of what you brought back, Did you tour parts of where they make chocolate, or what did you see there about that?
I didn't get to go to the one chocolate farm I would have liked to have seen, which is by the Amazon. Maybe that's another trip. But I did get to go in Mindo. There is a place they have, they had some cacao trees on their property. So I did get, and they did process cacao there. So I did get to see what happens from bean to bar. And that was very interesting.
So what's interesting to me about chocolate is the transformation in taste from bean to bar. I know at different places we've had the chance to try the cacao beans all the way up to the chocolate, and wow, what a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you wonder, you know, what in history happened to cause people to figure out they could get such a sweet taste out of what's a pretty intensely non-sweet taste at the start.
Exactly. I mean, and you could wonder that for coffee or for vanilla, even.
You definitely could. What was some of the interesting plant life or nature, birds, or other kind of things that you saw that maybe were different from good old wintry, as it is today, Wisconsin, that stick out in your mind from going to Ecuador?
I'm not a huge birder, but I certainly appreciate bird song. I did go to Mindo, which is about two and a half hours northwest of Quito, in the cloud forest. And a cloud forest is a place where mountains, where the mountain air and the coastal air meet, and then it, because of the precipitation, the mountains are very lush, and so that attracts a lot of bird life. And it's consequently a huge area for different birds. And like I said, I'm not a birder, so if you ask me what to name which bird that it was, I'd be like, I don't know. But I saw lots of very colorful birds, and of course for the bird song, there's a plethora of butterflies there. But for me, what I liked most as far as the plant life is I love orchids, and I got to stay at a place in Mindo where they had hundreds of different kinds of orchids, some that were as big as my thumbnail. And I also toured another botanical garden where I got to see orchids, and that was really neat. I mentioned earlier that I had an opportunity to tour an ethnobotanical garden in an indigenous community, and it was interesting to learn. I mean, some of the plants that they have are ones that are familiar to us, but it's also interesting to think about how they use some of the different parts of the plants that we wouldn't think of. For example, certain varieties of figs have leaves that are used in preparations that help women who are pregnant.
Interesting. On the orchids, you said some, you know, the size of your thumbnail, it's pretty small. Were there some that were what we might consider from orchids, you know, that we traditionally encounter abnormally large that you experienced?
No, I didn't see any really large orchids, but the tiny ones were interesting. But, you know, they're all beautiful. I saw ones in different colors. A few of the varieties that you might see in stores like Dendrobium that are very popular, or the Cataya, but there are many other varieties that you don't typically see in bridal bouquets or anywhere here in the U.S.
One of the things, Amy, that I recall in, you know, you getting ready for Ecuador was something I would have never thought of, about going to some countries, checking to be sure about the rules around what you can bring in as far as electronics. And I know that, I think it was, you can only bring in like two phone type devices, only one of which can be new. I might have the precise details wrong, but I found that kind of interesting, of something I wouldn't have thought about checking.
Exactly. That was interesting. I happened to come across that when I was reading an expat's blog, that they talked about some of the restrictions. And so when I went and looked at the entry requirements for Ecuador, they are pretty strict on how much technology you can bring. Now, I only brought my one phone. Well, actually, I brought a backup phone. But, you know, you can, I think you can only take one laptop and a couple of phones. So if you're someone who needs a lot of technology, I assume you'd probably have to apply for a permit or something for that. So that was interesting. And again, I think it's always a good idea to take a look at what are there any entry requirements to the country that you should be aware of so that you don't bring something inappropriate or illegal.
It's been a couple months since you've come back from Ecuador now. Is there, and there might be more than one, but are there things that really, you know, are starting to emerge as standouts in your memory as you reflect on the experience?
Of course, the shaman cleansing was very interesting. I enjoyed that day very much. I also enjoyed seeing Cuenca. They have a gorgeous cathedral that is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. I got to meet some people, a German couple who's about our age when I was traveling south, and I really appreciated getting to know other people. And it's always nice to be able to sometimes interact with other travelers.
Can you talk a little bit more about the cathedral?
About that cathedral? Well, it's beautiful on the outside, these beautiful domes that are white and blue, that kind of like the Madonna's robe, if you will. The inside was not as spectacular. The most spectacular, I mean, if you want to go to a place where there are lots of cathedrals, go to Quito. I forget how many cathedrals they have, like dozens. But one of the most interesting ones I saw was La Compañía de Jesús. And that is so much gold leaf inside, it's just breathtaking. But you look at that and you also think about who constructed this cathedral back in the 1500s, and where did they get this gold, and how, you know, who suffered for that? So while you can admire that kind of beauty, you also think about some of the, you know, colonial roots of that, and, you know, who benefited and who suffered for that.
Like anything, you know, life is also learning. Are there things that you would do differently the next time if you go back to Ecuador, things that you thought, you know, were kind of really key to do that once you did them, you'd be like, that didn't need to be on the itinerary?
Okay, so those are two different questions. So must-sees, if you go to Ecuador, and again, I only saw one of the four regions, so if I go back, I would probably see a different region. But if you're going to go see the mountains of the mountain region of Ecuador, of course, spend a couple days in Quito. I would recommend going to see the Quilotoa Crater Lake, which is beautiful, a vibrant blue. Cotopaxi, a national park where you can see the volcano. Baños is the center of adventures, and in fact, I went whitewater rafting there. It was the first time I'd ever done that, which was an interesting experience.
What was that like?
Well, I mean, I was the oldest person there, but they coach you. It's a Class 3 rapids. Before you get into the raft, they coach you on, you know, how you raft together, you know, how you decide to, you know, use your words, Amy, that you're going, you know, that, you know, who's going to be leading people to tell you where to direct your paddle, and then what word to use when you need to get it, when there's someone at the back who sees where the rapids are, and if you have to jump in into the raft and hang on to the rope. Because when you're rafting on the river, you sit on the side of this inflatable raft, and you paddle. And so that was, and at one point we got out of the raft and swam in the river, and that was neat too. So it was a great experience, but it's also an experience that, okay, I've done it, and it'd be fun to do it again, but if I don't do it again ever, I'm at peace with that.
You are going down the river. Did you tip over at all or anything?
No. I mean, I was bound and determined I was not going to tip over. So I pretty much, you have like, you're seated kind of at an angle when you're in the when you're on the raft paddling, but I always kind of, I shifted myself a little bit so that I could get in a little faster if we had to jump in.
So it sounds like overall Ecuador, and I know you enjoyed it.
I didn't get to answer the other question. Can I do that quick?
Yes, my apologies.
Oh, no worries. So those are parts that I think that people should not miss if they're going to go to the mountainous region. I thought, you know, Alausi was, they don't have the train that runs through there anymore, but it's a pretty place to spend a couple of days. So the second question that you had asked was, what are the things I would do differently? And there's always learning experiences when you travel. In Ecuador, cash is king. You can pay for hotel stays and stuff in some of the touristy areas with your credit card and such, but generally cash is the way to go, so make sure you have enough cash with you. I went to Mindo, and I discovered, and while I had some cash, you know, to get me through a couple of days for activities and such like that, I discovered that the hotel I was staying at, they accepted credit cards, but there were extra fees if you use credit cards, and some of that was probably their personal policies, but some of that may have also been the regional policies. So that and Mindo does not have a functioning ATM, so you would have to take a cab to like a town 25 kilometers away, and so that kind of put a damper on some things, because then I was really conscientious about, you know, watching my cash and such like that. And Mindo is like I said, it's a beautiful place. It's got a lot of biodiversity. I think it's really a fabulous place if you are with, if you like birding. I did find that it was generally more expensive than some of the other touristy areas, so that was something that I noticed. I ended up staying there 4 nights, and I could have made the choice to stop and have it for 3, but I decided to stick it out, and you know, that's okay. But if I were to plan, knowing what I know now, I would have spent a day less in Mindo and probably spent an extra day or two in Otavalo.
Hey, you mentioned something that I hadn't heard before, the name of a place, Crater Lake. So I'm really curious, because we've been to both of them, Crater Lake, Oregon. How do the two compare? Like, what does this one look like compared to the Oregon, and are they? I remember a lot of people in Oregon commented about how blue that lake was too. What are those like?
Well, so I actually went to 2 crater lakes in Ecuador. I went to Lake Quicocha, which means guinea pig lake, and I went to Quilotoa. The colors, of course, can depend on, you know, lighting and stuff like that. But the crater lake in Oregon tends to be a darker, more vivid blue. And so there's some different minerals in that lake than there are in Quilotoa, which has more of a blue-green color. The Crater Lake in Oregon also has that distinctive island in the middle that they call Wizard Island, so it looks like a mini volcano. And they have islands in Lake Quicocha, as well as, I think there's one in Quilotoa, but they don't have that distinctive look to it. So they're all very interesting. They each are unique. They don't look just like alike.
So it sounds like all in all, Ecuador was a pretty well-rounded trip. What's next on the list?
I'd like to go to North Africa, but I also want to go some other places. I always, you know, I like I said, it depends on when I'm available, depends on what's going on in the world, budget and such like that. So stay tuned.
Well, thanks a bunch, Amy, for coming on the podcast to be named later. And entertaining all my curiosity and questions multiple times.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. I love travel, as you know, and I like talking about it. And hopefully people who are listening enjoyed it too.